Hello, grandkids, and welcome to Stunt Granny Audio 586. This is Kevin DeFrango. On the other end is Chris Calamita. What is up, good sir?
Not a heck of a lot, Kevin. How about yourself?
Oh, you know, it's just the usual in the day of a life of someone trying to find a job. How does it feel to have the internet back?
It feels pretty good. Going 4 days without the internet makes put me back in about 15-20 years, if not more. It really puts in perspective how much we utilize this this grand invention. I mean, granted, I did have my phone and unlimited data, so it wasn't like I was completely cut off from my online world, but it was definitely different.
Well, and that's one of those things that I kind of forget that. I mean, I'm basically using WoW's Roku at this point, the WoW Plus TV, so everything runs through the internet. So I'm kind of screwed if I'd lose it for 4 days. Like, I don't think I'd have TV for 4 days. So.
Yeah.
You know, it would be a real problem.
It went out with storms last weekend, and then basically it stayed out because of a modem issue on my end here.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
So got ourselves a new modem, and everything is doing pretty damn good.
Nice. Well, you did not need, the internets to, watch Monday Night Raw, which, contains our biggest story, I suppose, this week. And that, I don't know, what's the, is the bigger story that, Sasha Banks won or that, Kairi Sane is out of here?
With all due respect to Kairi Sane, I think the bigger story is Sasha Banks winning the Raw Women's Championship under the circumstances that she did, and the moving forward with the two woman power trip or whatever we're calling it with Sasha and Bayley officially holding all the women's gold, except for the NXT Women's Championship, I guess, obviously.
Yeah, I mean, I'd have to say that's a pretty, pretty nice haul for the, for Bayley and Banks. I think that it would get pretty silly if they had her, if they had either one of them beat, Io Shirai at this juncture. And, you know, it's, that title change is one of those things that it's a little bit tough for me. I obviously think that Banks and Bayley have probably been the better part of the or the best part of the shows probably for the last 2 months, and Asuka was carrying things prior to that, and I still think that she's doing an excellent job, but it just the way that the victory happened, like, I know you want it to be kind of the rules of the match set forth by Stephanie caused the loss, but it drives me bananas when Sasha Banks stays down the whole 10 count, and so that honestly means all Asuka needed to do was put on the Asuka lock, tap out Sasha, and then run to the back. And we would have had the same result. Well, I'm sorry, not the same result. Finding Kairi Sane, quote unquote, WWE dead, maybe is a good way to put it.
The whole thing was very, very. It was very melodramatic. You got Kairi Sane, who's an accomplished wrestler in her own right, multiple time champion, beat Bayley just last week in a decision that's mind boggling in its own right.
Oh,
and she is getting her ass handed to her by Bailey to such a degree that she is screaming for Asuka and left unconscious. And then left unconscious.
Yeah, that's another part of the angle Bailey. That I didn't think about as much, but it's another one that is... I was kind of thinking to myself, why is she getting her ass kicked this much? Like, I know that Bailey could have attacked from behind, but they didn't really ever show that, so it's hard. You know, like, you would assume that something like
Kyrie
that
happened. Was chasing Bailey. Kyrie was chasing Bailey backstage.
Yeah.
Started the whole thing off. Yeah. It just set up this really just melodramatic, you know, spot of Asuka finding Kairi Sane unconscious, and then, it was a lot, and I'm not saying that it can't end up all right in the end, but and a lot of people aren't seeing it. It's more the, oh my God, you know, every once in a while, they trot out the title can change hands out of disqualification or a count out and stipulation, and it almost never ever goes down that way. I think the last time I can remember it going down like that was something with Orton and Christian over the world title on SmackDown. They did something like that.
Okay.
To keep that feud going, that would have been 9 years ago. That would be 9 years ago. So it's not something they do often, but it's still a really cheap way to have, even to have a heel win. You know, just, you know, beat somebody in the middle of the ring. I don't care how much you have to cheat to do it.
Oh, right. Yeah, when you don't score any type of pinfall and or submission to win the belt, and again, not to put too fine of a point on it, Sasha Banks was laying down the entire 10 count. Like, it's a pretty lame way to win the belt. I mean, I understand that they keep on, or at least Tom Phillips, I feel like, and I don't know if Michael Cole does it as much on SmackDown, but they're really pushing kind of the undeserving part on Sasha and Bailey. And I just don't really feel that vibe, especially since they've had both of them not really cheating for the other as much recently.
Yeah, you could say that. I mean, you do have to wonder if, yes, Sasha and Bailey have been largely carrying the load so much on both shows, particularly the last, you know, 4 or 5 weeks. But you gotta wonder, is this overkill now?
is this where
we start to see diminishing returns? Because here's Asuka and Sasha have been having absolutely tremendous matches. I don't think anyone can disagree with that. But it also, I don't know if I necessarily feel like they're breaking any new ground, because we've seen so many matches these last 4, 5, maybe 6 weeks of TV where, you know, these women are just getting, you know, 15, 20 minutes to, you know, to have matches. And it gets to the point where it's just like, there's just, they've thrown a lot at the wall. Is what I'm trying to say.
Oh, okay.
When it comes to these women, especially with Asuka feuding with Sasha and Bailey, that it's just, you know, it almost becomes too much of a good thing, and you know you get tired of you know, the whole saying of you get tired of pizza or ice cream if you have it every day. Something like that.
Well, I agree with you. Like, I think the thing that it's easy to agree with you is just how often the WWE has just kind of gone bonkers with this kind of, you know, like where they've essentially over pushed people. And,
yeah, and it's.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
It's just like you can see it come. Like with that victory, it's just like. This is going to get, you know, like that thought already starts running through your mind where it's just like, this is going to go from entertaining to they're on my screen so much that I'm tired of it.
Yeah, no, it could absolutely happen. And they really do need to have a spectacular idea heading into SummerSlam, I think, to make this all worth it, to really... You know, do this blow off to get Asuka's ultimate revenge. Once again, as cheesy as it kind of was, and melodramatic as it kind of was, you know, sometimes that can work. And if we really get a pissed off, angry Asuka, you know, looking to commit murder, you know, that could be really fun. But you know, here it's the follow through and how they end things at SummerSlam. I think it's really important here. Because we're putting the focus on now on these three women. I don't know if Asuka's going to get a new partner or not, you know, with the tag titles also in the wind, or if she'll just face one of them at SummerSlam while the other one goes on to face somebody else. Or who knows how. Once again, they've really got to come up with something really good here, because you know, not only do we have, you know, this situation where these three women can feel like, you know, they're overexposed and getting stale, we're also not focusing on the other women as well. I mean, you did that, you know, pretty damn entertaining for what it was, pull apart brawl with Nia Jax and Shayna Baszler. Now, in my head, when that was going on earlier in the show, I'm thinking, okay, they're going to do a triple threat with Asuka at SummerSlam. Well, that's not where we're going, so, What the hell are Shayna and Nia fighting for? What's anybody fighting for?
And that one just seems awkward because it's just both of them have been presented as heels, and as awkward as a babyface versus babyface match is, it's about 1,000 times more awkward to have a heel versus a heel. Even if there isn't a crowd there, it's just like, I don't know, honestly, the only thought going through my mind was, I want to see Nia Jax do something dumb to Shayna Baszler, and Shayna Baszler rips her arm off. It was the only thoughts coming through my mind. You know, Nia Jax is such a safe wrestler, except for the fact that she injures everyone that she wrestles.
Well, tell us how you really feel, Kevin. Tell us how you really feel.
Well, I mean, when it's mostly true, when at least 50% of her opponents have been injured, really not a good ratio, especially when you're off TV for a year and a half for double ACL surgery or double knee surgery.
Double knee surgery, yes.
You know, and again, like, your fame has come through maybe putting Becky Lynch over the top because you legitimately punched her. Like, that is your most famous moment. I would definitely take Nyla Rose over Nia Jax at this point. Like, Nia Jax has had enough of a runway at this point. Like, I remember thinking when she got called up, like, oh, why'd they do it at this point? And it's too early, but she's had enough time to develop, and I don't find her that interesting. And maybe it's, you know, the WWE has never done a terribly good job of even keeping the big guys all that interesting for very long. Like, because there were times where the Big Show just kind of, it just got boring. Like, they're so much bigger than everyone else that you have a hard time believing that they can lose to anyone unless they slip on a banana peel. And then they slip on banana peels match after match after match. So, like, even if I kind of divest the whole she injures 50% of her opponents, like, she's lost so frequently that it's kind of hard to take her seriously. And especially since she's lost to most of the women that are still at the top of the division.
No, you're absolutely right about all of that. But I will say, in the one thing, if they had decided to go all out with a, you know, three-way or four-way women's match, just a clusterfuck brawl where it's reminiscent of the 2017 SummerSlam, you know, four-way, Universal title four-way.
Oh.
Where it's just a clusterfuck brawl. And you know what? Is someone actually going to get legitimately hurt here? it is actually one of the selling points.
yes, it is.
But no, that's not where they're going, because you know, Asuka's going to be tied up with Sasha and or Bayley heading into SummerSlam, and who knows if she's getting that belt. I'm not 100% sure what they're gonna do, because you know, do you do Asuka versus Sasha again? Do you or which would make the most sense? You could do obviously Asuka's gonna want her pound of flesh from Bayley, but no, Asuka can't win the SmackDown title and then not go to SmackDown. So,
yeah, unless they work out some. Go ahead.
Wait. Or they just got to do some kind of, you know, gimmick match which puts her against both of them with or without a partner, something of that sort. We'll see. Once again, I said, for this to be worth it, they have to have a good idea for SummerSlam.
Yeah.
Otherwise, they should have just had Asuka beat Sasha, and they all go their separate ways.
Yeah, and it really was one of those things, too, where the feud was good enough. I've got to admit, I was kind of expecting a dumb finish to that match, but I was expecting something that would, like, kind of truly continue the feud. And I guess losing the belt doesn't continue the feud, because to me, more times than not, and it's probably more than 9 times out of 10, that anytime someone drops the belt, they don't get it back the next match. So, yeah, I mean, you could have a situation where, to me, I guess you could have if Asuka beats Bayley, she moves to SmackDown and Bayley moves to Raw. But I'm not sure what that does for you either.
No. Then unless Charlotte's coming back imminently, there's no top babyface woman on Raw. if you lose Asuka, because I mean Charlotte was set up to return a babyface because she was attacked by Nia Jax.
Oh.
But if that's not imminently happening, then no. Asuka. Asuka has to stay on Raw and be the top. The lead female babyface, because, well, we know Becky Lynch ain't coming back anytime soon.
yeah, and I mean, they still haven't done a terribly good job. Like, Bayley, it's kind of funny that pretty much only Bayley, Asuka is the only, to me, is the only true person that got elevated during this whole thing. Because I guess there's maybe a renewal of interest in Sasha Banks, and Bayley was already on her way to, you know, I mean, what, she's held the belt for almost a year at this point?
She's held the belt for almost a year, but at the same time, really, maybe before, honestly, I don't know if she was necessarily... You know, she came into her. She's one of those people who came into her own post lockdown era.
Post
COVID. Yeah, in that. I mean, Bayley is carrying herself. I mean, with a confidence we've actually never seen from her before. It's an amazing transformation, and the bulk of it, you could say it started last year, you know, or maybe last fall, winter, but she really didn't come into her own until, you know, really, you know, once again, March or April, to do what she is now, and Sasha's definitely doing the best work of her career, character-wise, doing the best work of her career. I mean, I think as a worker, her, you know, Sasha's still, you know, excellent, but I mean, her Sasha's best work in the ring is probably still, you know, last year in NXT, first year on the main roster.
Yeah, well, and you could almost make an argument that this more recent stuff is better just simply because they rushed her and Charlotte through so many specialty matches that she wasn't really there was a Hell in a Cell. Did they do a TLC or just a ladder match?
They never did a ladder match. They did a Hell in a Cell, a Falls Count Anywhere, and then the Iron Man match.
Oh.
Yeah, the story of Sasha and Charlotte was they had great matches on TV, on Raw, but their pay-per-view matches always disappointed. It was the weirdest, most disjointed feud, one of the weirdest, most disjointed feuds ever, and it would just never end because back then they were holding themselves to, you know, you got to have that guaranteed rematch within 30 days, so they just kept passing the women's title back and forth.
Yeah, that was one of those few times I was just arguing the other direction where someone doesn't usually lose it the first time around, but those two ladies kept on losing it in first title defenses left and right, especially Sasha.
Sasha's a five-time women's champion. Grand total, 83 days combined.
Wow. If she just holds on to that belt until SummerSlam, she's almost going to double that total. Oh, man. But, yeah. Oh, but yeah, none of... And I guess I kind of started to diverge on the point where... Yeah, like, so I think we both agreed that even Sasha and Bayley they've gotten even more of a push. Even though they're part of the Four Horsewomen and they've definitely been on TV, they've definitely been featured more recently than they had been. And I do think that you're right. The beginning of Bayley's title run was pretty tame, and she always almost seemed like the second fiddle on SmackDown. Because if I'm not mistaken, Charlotte was still there for a while. And Charlotte was still chewing up most of the scenery.
Until the most recent. Well, let's see. Charlotte chewing up. That's for sure. And of course, the wild card rule didn't help things. For a while, you didn't know who was actually supposed to be on which show officially. You know, the inconsistency with Charlotte's character. But so yeah, I'll definitely give that to you.
Yeah. So, but it, like, I can't think of anyone. Like, I was thinking about SmackDown, and they had the evidence. I didn't realize. I think I did see a little bit of the Naomi deserves better trend, which, you know, popped up on WWE TV this past week, and you know, that's another one where I'm like, oh, so Lacey Evans is a heel again? Question mark, exclamation mark, question mark, more question marks. So, you know, like, none of the other women have really gotten to shine in the meantime. You know, like, again, Bayley and Sasha and Asuka have. But other than that, oh man, that's a pretty... tame list of who's gotten a push, because I'm not even going to say that Lacey Evans has really gotten a push, you know, and obviously Naomi hasn't either. So, you know, it's kind of funny, like, even though Charlotte's gone and Becky's gone, the WWE basically has the same problem where they're just concentrating on three women at a time, with a rotating fourth.
Yeah, you could certainly say that.
What, Shayna went into witness protection after WrestleMania, and...
Well, after Money in the Bank.
Which one was that?
That was after the climb the corporate ladder.
Oh, okay, yeah.
Wrong. That's where she choked out Rey Mysterio.
That'll never not be funny. She was gone for a while, and honestly, Nia Jax, she came back, but she hasn't really been on TV a whole lot since she's been back.
Yeah, no. I mean, she came back after WrestleMania. She did the one. She was also in Money in the Bank as well, and then she got her singles match with Asuka, a second singles match with Asuka, which had that shitty finish with the referee. They're still trying to play off of, so at least there's some
merit some to story. It.
I don't want to call it that. Then she took out Charlotte, and then she was off TV as well, which of course matches with the timeline of a bunch of people, you know, testing positive for COVID.
Oh,
not saying that because I don't know, but it matches the timeline.
That is always a little bit of a problem. You're never completely sure how much their stories are getting thrown off because of positive tests, because they don't say anything. I mean, it's kind of like injuries, where there are times where I really don't know what's going on, just because, you know, someone drops off TV, and it's not like Michael Cole or Tom Phillips or really anyone on any announce team mentions that they're going to be out for a while, and you can't really look up the injured reserve roster on the WWE's page to figure these things out. It's up to the Dave Meltzers of the world to piece these things together. It's just kind of weird. It's kind of crazy that the women have been carrying the product, but it's still just been a very few number of women carrying the product during this time frame.
Yes, and the question is, have we reached the tipping point of the oversaturation with these three women, Sasha and Bayley in particular? Because, you know what, Sasha and Bayley's characters are there to be, you know, it's over the top, insufferably annoying, but there's a shelf life on that before that, where they just continue to be insufferably annoying and also winning all the time. That they need to start getting their comeuppance before people start to tune out, and we may be about it at that point.
That's one of those topics that I don't pay that much attention to, but I suppose I did see the headline that they're even lower ratings than before. And
I certainly do not want to put any kind of blame on Sasha and Bayley for that.
Oh,
or without any proof, but it's also not a vote of confidence either.
No, it's it's just a W. Well, I don't even know if it's a I mean, is it just a wrestling thing in general, honestly? Like, I know that... Because did AEW this past week have 1 million viewers finally for the first time?
No, they do not. They do not have...
Okay.
Well, I don't know. I don't remember how it's... I think it's households, and they think there's like there's at least 2 to 4 people in each house watching together, even though many times it's not. It's nowhere near an exact science.
Oh.
Yeah. But yeah, I mean, they're topping off at 750,000 to 800,000.
Okay.
Whichever. So is it the lead for whichever week? Basically, there's 1.5 million people watching wrestling on Wednesday nights.
Oh. Yeah, in a country of, what is it, 350 million or something like that?
Yeah, something like that, yes.
Yeah, those are not good odds. I mean, hey, if the networks are happy with them, then good for everyone involved. But that still isn't a terribly large audience. So yeah, I'm not sure that... yeah, the ladies are to blame, if it's the atmosphere. There was a lot, honestly, not to like about Raw. Like, I keep on getting texts, and I'm not sure if Jeremy and I talked about it last week, but I couldn't believe that I counted 31 camera angle changes during the Seth Rollins promo. Before Dominic Mysterio came out,
that's absolutely ridiculous, and it could be part of the problem. It's not helping.
Yeah, it's not helping, and I mean, I'm not sure. I mean, we've tried it. I don't know how many times we're like, "What's the solution?" And we both sit here. No matter who the combo is, and you just shrug your shoulders, you know?
It's got to take time, and you're going to have to experiment with some things and, you know, move in a different direction, and you got to get I know it's everything, the demos, but the fact of the matter is, younger people are not gravitating towards wrestling. Yeah, we're not making new fans. They're not making new fans. They got to figure that out. The audience continues to age.
Oh yeah, because it was one of those. We had my nephew a couple of weekends ago, and he was kind of interested, but I don't think he's gonna go back home and ask to start taping the WWE. You know, he seemed to enjoy it. He kind of got into the angles, well, or at least he got into the swamp fight, because he watched the SmackDown prior to Extreme Rules, and then we watched a little bit of Extreme Rules. But again, like, I don't think I got him hooked on it. Like, he was kind of interested, but yeah, I don't think we have a new fan of wrestling just because of that happening. So, yeah, and again, that's really not a problem for us to solve, and we have zero control over it.
No, it's not. It is not my job or our problem. No, we don't even. We really don't even make any. we don't make any money off of this website. So. It's not like. If wrestling goes away completely, I guess we'll just find something else to do. Maybe we'll start covering guys' grocery games or something.
Well,
the true winner of the Wednesday Night Roar.
You know, I do remember, I don't know if it was near episode 300 or so, when Dusty's like, oh, F it, let's just talk about other stuff. And we did. And... you know, I think that's part of the reason for the birth of We Watch Stuff and OPA was just to not talk about wrestling. And I guess there's still enough stuff around to keep me interested, but there's just so much bad stuff that it gets tough sometimes to sit there and watch some of the programming. And I guess that whole, as bad as the camera angles were, the Seth Rollins stuff is somewhat intriguing, but there's still that weird logic gap in wrestling where, like, I had no idea why Dominic could be beat up by two wrestlers, but then when he starts attacking them, the referees come out to save the heels. Like, what weird wrestling trope is that that I've never heard of? Like, aren't the referees supposed to come out and save baby faces instead of the heels? Or have I not watched wrestling for most of my life?
The referees are supposed to be impartial.
Well, yes, this is true. But
no, I mean, yeah, they were a little late there, and of course, poor Aleister Black had to show up and get beat up again. Next week he'll end up. After next week he'll be in a full body cast. Still hasn't learned the lesson to mind his own business. I guess that's supposed to be it. The end game for this is Ray and Dominic versus Seth and Buddy. I assume we're getting that at SummerSlam because they're. We got the medical report on Rey Mysterio that his vision is returning to his eye.
Oh,
which also means that Rey has finally signed his new contract.
Yeah, I would imagine that's what that means.
Yeah, although it's kind of amusing that The original gouging out Ray's eye angle they did on Raw put Ray out for, what, about 2 months? Give or take?
Yeah.
A month and a half, maybe 6 weeks.
That sounds reasonable.
Six, 7 weeks. Yeah. But this one, he's going to come back and. After losing the match where they promised someone's eye was going to be ripped out of the socket, he will be medically cleared to return. In less time than the original angle.
Yep.
Yeah, I mean, just what's the timing they had. I mean, obviously, you SummerSlam needs some kind of a certainly needs some sort of special attractions to have on the show, and the intrigue of having Dominic in his first match ever. On a major pay-per-view teaming with his dad, it would fit that bill. Since there's not much else that's going to differentiate SummerSlam from every other show that they've done since WrestleMania. Brock's not coming back. There's going to be no other. Doesn't seem to be any other special appearances.
Yeah, and I mean, I guess I can't think of anyone that's kind of taken a lot of time off that would come back, like, other than Brock Lesnar, but I don't see him coming back anytime soon.
No, I don't see him coming back. Edge is injured, so I imagine the original plan was for Edge to work all the majors, but he's not going to be cleared in time for SummerSlam. Maybe not even cleared before the end of the year. So, yeah, no, I mean, I guess the special attraction for SummerSlam really is going to be if they can pull off having SummerSlam at another location. They're talking about, there's rumors that they're looking at, on a beach somewhere, outdoors, really playing up the biggest part of the summer theme, possibly even on a boat in international waters.
Oh, wouldn't that Chris Jericho will have a field day with that. If not that they can do an actual cruise right now, because, man, you want to talk about a terrible place to be. I don't think anyone wants to be on a cruise right now. But it would be kind of funny if they did it on a ship, a la the Jara cruise. Just to kind of have him play that up. Like, I brought this idea to these idiots so long ago, and they never wanted to do it. But yeah, I guess I could see that. It would definitely break up and I mean, that might be part of it. Just break up the monotony of these tapings. And I think that it's really even something that I don't. How much have you watched any sports without a crowd?
I think I ended up watching a little bit of a preseason baseball game like last weekend.
Okay, yeah, because it's not any. It's as weird as wrestling without a crowd. Even when they're doing the piped in music, you're just sit or the piped in crowd noise, you're sitting there going, "I know this is piped in, like no one's there." And it's yeah, like there's definitely going to be a missing element to wrestling. And no one has really adapted to it, because I'm definitely including AEW in this. Like, they're basically just running their shows like it is a regular wrestling show. Instead of, like, this, I guess you could argue that the cinematic matches are a change up, but A, you can't do them all the time, and B, if all the matches were cinematic matches, it would probably get a little out of hand. So, I mean, I don't, like, to me, there's not a whole lot of innovation that has come out of wrestling in general during this time period. Like, no one's really kind of come up. Like, I guess even doing it at a beach would kind of spice things up a little bit. But who knows,
Right, yeah.
like I guess we'll have to wait till SummerSlam to find out if something like that does indeed happen.
Oh, well, I'm pretty sure we'll find out sooner than that.
Well, yeah, I would if there I
Because, I mean,
yeah.
they have to lock this down very soon.
Yeah. I guess one of the other, and I don't know if it's an attraction for SummerSlam or not, but it is definitely a match that has been set up that is of at least a little bit of interest to me. Randy Orton versus Drew McIntyre. What are your thoughts on this feud that, well, not even a feud, like, because they basically just started this intrigue on Monday.
Yeah, no, we've been speculating for a while, since at least Backlash, or the match from after Backlash and the Raw the night after that. Randy Orton's been on a roll, and certainly he fits the bill as a SummerSlam worthy opponent for Drew McIntyre. In many ways, he's the only SummerSlam worthy opponent for Drew McIntyre at this point. They ran through at least a number of options. Beat Seth Rollins pretty quickly, beat Bobby Lashley in one match. So yeah, I mean, Orton's arguably their only option on the heel side to be, if you want to, make SummerSlam feel like it's bigger than the three pay-per-views that followed WrestleMania. I guess Orton's your only pick, and it's fine, it's good. As I said, it's probably it's the best option.
Yeah, and I guess I'm interested in what the outcome's gonna end up being with that match. Just in and of the fact that Drew McIntyre really hasn't had his, like, his signature win was his title win. And they haven't really fed him anyone terribly interesting in between. And this is his, to me, this is his first, quote unquote, real title defense. And just with the, I guess with the way Raw ended with Sasha winning, it would be kind of interesting to see if they give the title to Randy Orton at the end of SummerSlam.
Just because of momentum. Possible. I mean, there are a number of people who, I mean, everything that's happened is obviously sucked for everyone, but just, you know, focusing on, WWE and certain WWE stars, Drew McIntyre is absolutely hurt, one of the people hurt the most by not having a crowd present. We just don't know what Drew McIntyre as champion would have meant and how the crowd would have reacted to him as champion under normal circumstances.
Oh. Yeah.
And you said that really sucks for him, and I just don't know if they can keep him, you know, hot. You know, hot being, of course, a relative term during this period of time. Right. Until we get the crowds back, because we're not guaranteed anything. You know, heading into WrestleMania season at this point. I venture to guess that Los Angeles, they never actually announced a location for the 2021 Royal Rumble, and I think WrestleMania being able to happen at SoFi Stadium in Los Angeles is certainly, even this far out, in serious jeopardy.
Agreed. Like, just because, you know, most of the fall sports are already saying they don't think they're going to have a crowd, or at best it's going to be a minimized crowd. Like, that seems like a lot of money to output for a small crowd.
Yeah, it does. And once again, getting it back to Drew McIntyre, it's like, he's been champion since April. He's had 3 successful title defenses on pay-per-view. Ratings are down, which is pretty much the only metric you can really, look at this point, because there's no live crowds, and I imagine that WWE. I haven't heard anything. I imagine the WWE network has reached the point where it's just going to hold steady.
Oh,
I mean, yeah. People have no reason. I've given no reason to believe that they've had a mass exodus of any sort at this point, or are going to. But who knows about that? So yeah, it's unfortunate that Drew McIntyre did not get to play out his crowning and the aftermath in front of large crowds under normal circumstances. So yeah, I don't. And it is a very, very real possibility that he will lose to Randy Orton at SummerSlam.
Yeah, and I guess it's always that follow-up after the loss that really kind of indicates where things are for a guy like that. In my opinion, do they keep him up at the top of the card? Does he get the belt back at some point? Is kind of a huge one. I always feel like a second title reign is kind of the real coronation as, a guy at the top. I feel like we've had enough single title reigns where just having one isn't good enough. And honestly, you could probably even say that you can look at Dolph Ziggler and he had 2 title reigns and still didn't really get over. Or was over, but, got kicked in the head by Jack Swagger and never really got his push back after that. Because he's injury prone because another guy fucked up.
Right.
Anyway, always love when you place the game blame on someone that's got injured not of their own volition. I guess to get back to McIntyre and Orton, it should be a fun match. I do kind of like the build up. Randy Orton has been kind of another one of those, like, I think he's one of the few guys that you could argue is, he has not been an MVP to me of the pandemic era here, but he certainly is higher up on the ranks than most. Like, I mean, I think we obviously have talked about the ladies the most, which and they deserve it. But Randy Orton is probably the top male competitor during this time period, or do you think there's someone else that might have done better in the last 4 months or so than Orton? Do you think there's anyone else, male-wise, that has done better than Orton?
No, there has not. I mean, yeah, no. it's been... Look, men's wrestling has never been worse. I mean, there's no discernible men's star, which has been the case in wrestling for 100 years. There's no... It doesn't feel like the men are putting in the same... Putting aside anything creative or administrative or about it, the men just don't feel like they're, and it's been this way for a few years now. The men don't feel like they try as hard as the women do.
Oh, yeah, I can see that. Like, Jeremy and I last week kind of talked about the return possibly of a mid-card with the Hurt Business situation going on, and at least those six guys kind of getting more TV time than they were previously, but... I mean, that's really in the early stages, even at this point, you know, like as much as, and I know that you and I have talked about trying to keep MVP out of the ring, you know, it's kind of hard to say that they did a good job of rebuilding the mid-card in 2 weeks. And I'm also kind of looking here at the tag team division, and this is just one to me that is kind of emblematic of WWE, and I mean, I guess this kind of goes into booking more than effort, but, you know, Zelina Vega has three guys under her view, and then all of a sudden, you know, they lose a bunch of matches, they win one here, they lose, they win, and now they're in there for the tag team championships. It just, you know, like, I guess the effort maybe isn't there, but the writing in no way does them any favors.
No, it does not. That was absolutely ridiculous. They lost that non-title match last week and then won a triple threat and got back in the title picture and had a title match against the team they've already lost to clean in the middle. And I thought we were done with the whole dissension between Andrade and Angel Garza thing after Randy Orton supposedly, you know, put the fear of God into Angel Garza. I thought after that we were done with that. They were united to go after the tag titles. But then last week they're fighting each other again, and it's... And then this week, of course, there's no signs of dissension. You know what it is? It's the Bayley and Sasha storyline 2 years ago all over again.
Oh.
Fighting each other. everything's fine this week. There's dissension next week. They're fine the week after that. It's just stupid.
Yeah.
No, it is terrible writing.
Yeah, and, well, yeah, I guess Orton is the only one that's kind of seemed to put in some effort. I guess I have enjoyed the Rollins stuff a little bit, but there's still an awkwardness to that angle that doesn't make it great. Or to really kind of... his promos have been better since he went heel, but again, maybe it's because of the crowd, or maybe it's just the writing that there hasn't been... Yeah, it's just going to be hard to buy someone pulling out someone else's eye.
Yeah, no, it was... Yeah, the whole thing was very silly. They did the best they could with it, but it's... Yeah, it was pretty silly.
Yeah, I don't know. Is there anything else WWE-wise that needs to be covered before we get on out of here?
You know what? No, I really don't think so.
Okie dokie. Well, I will mention that the beverage of choice was Bearded Pleasure from Two Tones Brewing here in Columbus. It is one of the smaller breweries and has only been around for a couple of years at this juncture. It is a... It's a solid imperial stout. It is maybe not up there with some of my other favorites, but it's pretty good. And I think that their beer in general, for being one of the newer breweries, is maybe not at the top of the heap, but a lot of these new ones I'm not terribly excited about. And this one is near my my house, maybe only about 15 minutes away. So I would like to say that in general, I like their beer. I am looking forward very much to Tegrity Farmhouse Ale, which they named after a South Park episode. Well, not even just an episode, since Randy runs Tegrity Farms marijuana. So I did like that they turned that into a farmhouse sale. So I will look forward to that one from them too. It will be a much lighter and a much more summery beer. I have really gravitated towards the light low ABV beers this summer. So I look forward to that one. With that, I will do the usual plugs at DeFrango11, at Stunt Cali. The brand is at Stunt Granny. Rate and review us on Apple Podcasts. Subscribe to us pretty much anywhere. Spotify, Google Podcasts, Stitcher, iHeartRadio. And I think those are the main ones. So I'm out of here. We're out of here. There's two of us. So we're out of here. We will see you next week.
Later.